two things I boiled it down to because I'm a simplifier.
Yeah.
Is the first thing is love sees value. Mm-hmm. It sees that people have value, sees that you have value. Love sees, notices, and recognizes and validates the value in a person. But then the second thing about love, it's not just unconditional acceptance, because you could let someone go hurt themselves. That's not loving. That's not kind. So the second thing about love is love has your best interest at heart.
Mm.
It wants what's best for you. If you have a little kid's running out into the street, you're going to stop that little kid from running into the street because you love them. You don't want them to get run over by a car.
Yeah.
That's a very simplistic way to put it, but I think we need simple. We live in a very complicated world, so the more we can simplify it, the better. But in my own personal story, it was unconditional love that changed my life. And that's why I focus on love so much.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Easy Conversations podcast, a podcast about having easy conversations. I'm your host, Furkan Dandia. This week's episode, I sit down with Danielle Burnock, who is an author, speaker, and self-love coach. And we talk about the transformative power of unconditional love. Danielle shares her journey through trauma, emotional neglect, and healing, and how discovering unconditional love reshaped her life. This conversation explores why many of us struggle to receive love, how our past influences our relationships, and what it means to truly develop self-worth. Together, we discuss the difference between conditional and unconditional love, the role of boundaries, the impact of loneliness and disconnection, and how faith can contribute to healing. Danielle Burnock helps adults repair and build healthy relationships, beginning with their relationship with themselves. She is a trauma-informed, faith-aware, self-love coach, speaker, and author who makes healing understandable, gentle, and practical. Danielle is also widely known as that lady on the internet who loves you. Please check out all the ways you can find Danielle online. And the content shared on this podcast is for educational and informational purposes only and should not be considered therapy. So as always, if you're seeking professional help, reach out to anyone within that domain. Now let's just jump right into the episode. Danielle, welcome to the Easy Conversations podcast. Thank you for joining me this morning. I'm really excited to have you on the show and have this conversation. I think there's so much meaning that can be taken out from your story. And I think there's a lot of inspiration behind everything you've gone through and how you've found your way in life. But before we get into all of that and the takeaways that people can take from your story, I want to give you an opportunity to share with the listeners a little bit about yourself, who you are, and what's brought you here today.
First of all, thank you for having me and giving me this opportunity to share with your audience. It's truly an honor. Mm-hmm. Who am I? I am Danielle Burnock. I am known as that lady on the internet who loves you. Mm-hmm. That came about during the pandemic because I am all about sharing love, because people need to know that they are loved. They are worthy of love. They have inherent value. Mm. And I came to do what I do because of my personal story. I wrote a memoir and it resonated with people, but that led me into wanting to share more because stories are powerful and people can relate to what you go through, and you can lift other people up by making yourself vulnerable and daring to share those things that can be scary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you said after the pandemic, so what about that time was relevant for you to come to that realization that maybe I need to do more or share my story and support others? What came to you? I think that time for many people was interesting. And I think in my conversations, not only for myself, but in general with other people, being in that isolated state brought a lot of things to the forefront. And I think some people pushed it away and some people embraced it. So I am curious in terms of your experience and what came forward for you.
I had released my memoir years before that. So I was already out there on the internet. I felt a certain responsibility, I guess, because I was out there. People were knowing who I was. I'd had other books that I had shared, but I could feel the fear in the air. You could feel the fear in the atmosphere, the energy of it. And I just felt it coming before the shutdown even occurred. And love is what drives fear out. So I'm like, I need to do something about this. So I stumbled all over myself because I wasn't on the internet as much back then as I am now.
Yeah.
So I stumbled my way into that lady on the internet. I started with showing up going, I love you and you need to know that you're loved. And I'm this lady over here and I'm on the, and I stumbled all over it. Till one day I grabbed it as a hashtag and now I have an IP protected, that lady on the internet who loves you. Some people balk at being told they're loved by someone they don't know. You don't know me. How can you tell me that you love me? I love you because you deserve to be loved and because you have value. And I believe people really need that. The pandemic changed the landscape of our world. Everyone knows that. But people became isolated. Loneliness happened in massive amounts. But then technology increased, which has been good in many ways. But also, it has not been good because we are more connected than ever digitally and on all these massive platforms, which can be wonderful, but it's not the same as sharing a meal with someone or an intimate conversation with a friend or being present in the room. It's wonderful to connect this way, and I'm happy for it. I have no problem with technology. I use it. I use AI. I use ChatGPT. I mean, I'm all for those things. I IP protected that lady on the internet who loves you. But there's nothing that replaces real, true, genuine connection in person with someone. You know, the sound of your voice, the feeling of the same energy in the room when someone, you know, touches what people touch. I don't know if you've ever watched Hallmark movies, people love to make fun of them. But there's always a point in a Hallmark movie because they're cheesy and my husband and I like them. We mock them in play while we're watching them because they come to a place where the two people, they finally touch. And it like changes everything. Oh, they touched each other. That's because touch is powerful and we need that kind of connection. We need that deeper connection. So through the pandemic, I rose up more because I saw the need more and I felt that fear and I wanted to be a part of driving it out. And love is what does that.
Yeah.
That's when I started coaching too, was actually during the pandemic is when I started coaching, helping people deal with that fear. And my very first client, oh, I love to tell her story. My very first client is someone who I know, she about 10 or so years older than me, and she had never dealt with her trauma and she was being traumatized by the pandemic. But I started coaching with her. She started sharing things from her childhood that had been invalidated by the people around her. And I kept stopping going, no, that matters. No, that's not, no, that was not, they did really. And she changed into a completely different person. She dropped about 50 pounds without even trying. And she told me, I think I was just so full of tears. So to give people a way to release that, to embrace who they are, that they matter, their pain matters, their mess matters, their loneliness matters, their trauma matters, their desire to live a life that matters, matters. And that's, I'm all about validating people and who they are. And for them to feel that love, we need to feel the love.
Yeah, absolutely. And what I'm hearing from you is there's this unconditional acceptance that we need to find for ourselves, and you're trying to propagate that message in the work you're doing and the stories you're telling. But your life also allowed you to learn that, right? I think we all come to these forms of understanding through our own personal journey, which then gives us that deeper sense of connection with other people because we can see parts of ourselves in them. Are you able to share a little bit about your personal story and why everything you're talking about is so relevant in terms of what you've been able to discover through the work you've had to do for yourself?
Of course. I think the part of the story that would really fit with what we're talking about here, because I have a lot of parts to my story. Yes. But one of the things I talk about is there are two different kinds of love in the world. There are two different kinds of love. People don't identify them. When you talk about them, then people go, oh yeah, and they nod their head and they understand. But people don't tend to identify them, relate to them, and choose which one they want. Mm-hmm. Because we have a choice of which one we want to operate within and allow in our life.
Yes.
There's unconditional love and there's conditional love. Conditional love is toxic. It's, I will love you if, I will love you when, I will love you if it serves me. And it's conditional. Whereas unconditional love is, I will love you no matter what. And on a podcast interview I did a couple of years ago, the host helped me to really be able to define, how do I define love? Just, you mentioned unconditional acceptance. And he says, is that what it is? I'm like, I don't think that's exactly right. So we talked our way through that. Of what is unconditional love? What does it look like? How does it behave? How do you notice it? Two things I boiled it down to, because I'm a simplifier.
Yeah.
Is the first thing is love sees value. Mm-hmm. It sees that people have value, sees that you have value. Love sees, notices, and recognizes and validates the value in a person. But then the second thing about love, it's not just unconditional acceptance, because you could let someone go hurt themselves. That's not loving. That's not kind. So the second thing about love is love has your best interest at heart.
Mm.
It wants what's best for you. If you have a little kid's running out into the street, you're going to stop that little kid from running into the street because you love them. You don't want them to get run over by a car.
Yeah.
That's a very simplistic way to put it, but I think we need simple. We live in a very complicated world. So the more we can simplify it, the better. But in my own personal story, it was unconditional love that changed my life. And that's why I focus on love so much. I was raised by parents who, they meant well, they did the best they could, but they didn't have what I needed. I suffered from childhood emotional neglect on top of a number of other traumas, which are unnecessary to get into here. But I grew up with conditional love. My parents grew up with conditional love. That's what they knew. People give what they know. And if they don't know anything else, they can't do anything else or give anything else. They did the best they knew how. And I love my parents. They're no longer alive, but I'm thankful for them. But I help people to recognize, just because your parents did the best they knew how doesn't mean you don't have stuff to deal with. We don't have to blame them per se to make them out to be terrible people, but we do need to deal with what affected us. So I grew up feeling unloved, unwanted, unworthy, and then I had religious trauma in there and all kinds of other things. So I felt worthless. Mm. And I was pretty much an emotional basket case by the time I became an adult. And I had an encounter with God, and my faith was brought back. And then God supernaturally brought a particular man into my life. It's a hilarious story, a whole chapter in my first book. So it's too much to get into the nitty gritty on that. But he loved me unconditionally. This man that God gave me loved me unconditionally. I was so accustomed to being thrown away and having to earn love and having to do whatever needed to be done to keep you in my life, even though I felt everyone left my life. So at the beginning of our relationship, I tried to make him go away by telling him all the bad things about me, to the point of leave me now, not later kind of thing. I was trying, it was self-protection at work. Mm-hmm. A lot of times people, they'll share and be vulnerable because we want to take this relationship deeper. No, it's not why I did it. I did it to make him go away. Go away at the beginning before I get attached to you.
Yeah.
But he didn't go away, and it surprised me. It astounded me. And he proposed to me in a very hilarious way. It's really, if you're watching a play and they're like, you go stand over there and then you say this and then you go over here and you do that. It's that hilarious of a story. But we got engaged, said we weren't going to tell anybody, didn't have a ring or anything. And the next day, his mom, we were at a retreat at a camp thing. His mom's crying all the way to breakfast that she's losing her baby. And we look at each other going, you told her. No, I didn't tell her. You told her. No, I didn't tell her. You told her. And we hadn't told her. And then when I got home from that trip, my mom says to me, so when are you announcing your engagement? I'm like, who told you? And she said, God told me. And then we went to this Bible study and we talked to the gentleman in charge of it. We wanted him to pray with us. And he said, so you're getting married. And I was like, who told you? God told me. So it was very supernatural and reinforced supernaturally that, yeah, we should get married. So when we announced it to my husband's parents, they said, do you love each other? Mm. And we stopped and we looked at each other and went, I guess so. It's yeah. Not a super romantic. We fell head over heels in love with each other, but we've been married 46 years next month. And we have fallen in love with each other, but we had unconditional love for one another. Mm-hmm. And that has been the foundation of our marriage and God putting us together with his unconditional love, because I grew up with my understanding of Christianity as a child. It was not unconditional. It was conditional. You need to behave like this and act like this and talk like this and go to church and do all the things. But that's not the God that I've come to know now. I have come to know God in a very different light than when I was growing up. And he has unconditional love. And that's why Jesus came, to show us that. Mm. He died and he rose again and he's still alive to represent that, to be attached to us. Like I said, I don't want to get attached to my husband. God wants to be attached to us. Mm. And that's not the God I grew up being told about. So that unconditional love is something I believe our world just craves. I believe it's what we're created for, that we live and breathe to love. I mean, we've heard the songs and looking for love in all the wrong places and the power of love. And if we look throughout all of history, love has been what people have been chasing the whole time. Yes. And so that's having my life turned around by unconditional love. My husband was love with skin on to me, still is, but I need that. And I feel so fortunate to have that. Sometimes I feel guilty for having that sort of survivor's guilt of I have it so good and some other people have suffered so badly, but everybody has their own kind of suffering. I had all the trauma and now I have this wonderfulness. So I'm not trying to negate anybody. I just want people to know that they are loved and I want to share that. I want to help people get that in their own self with my coaching. That's why I'm a self-love coach. You need to love yourself before you can love someone else. Like I tried to make my husband go away because I did not love myself. Right. But he was part of my healing that I love myself and I love other people. I'm an introvert, except for when I get on a platform like this.
Yes.
But I love people.
Yeah. I appreciate you sharing that whole story. And what I often see is, and you touched on it, is when we have these experiences where maybe someone shows us that unconditional love and it feels foreign to us. So we'll push it away, right? And continue to go back into, even though it's painful, we like to be in states that are familiar because that's all we know. Yeah. The unfamiliar can be scary sometimes, even though it can create more opportunity. We can experience different things. And in your case, you were able to step into that unknown, but it's brought so much joy for you. So when you're talking to people or when you're seeing other people in terms of the work you do, when they're closing themselves off to whatever that love may look like and are unable to accept it, what are you helping them? How are you helping them navigate that? Because I think at the end of the day, we have to open ourselves up, whether it's like to your point, love from God or love from other people. And I feel sometimes we just keep ourselves closed. And that's why you see so many people struggling and hurting others as well, because they're unable to receive that type of love.
Choice is the core of us. My process, my framework I created is called Self. And that's partly because that's where our choice resides. And our power of choice, human beings have the power of choice like no other, you know, living thing on the planet. And to empower them in their choice that they have the power. That power is theirs. I can't change their life for them. They have to do that themselves. And for them to see and recognize that power, you have to make the choice. I learned recently about the word decision. I hadn't thought about it before. I love learning things about words. But the word decide, C-I-D-E, means death. So when you decide It's putting to death all other options when you make a really good decision like that. And to help people to see that your choice empower them in their own choice. You can choose to let people love you conditionally, or you can choose to not put up with that. What does this choice look like to you? What do you want it to look like to you? And to empower them in their chooser and to train their chooser to choose. And then they have to practice that. They have to give themselves the grace, because they're not going to just make one decision and it be over if they've been steeped in it for a long time. It's just, it's not a thing. Mm. And I love the illustration of watching a little kid learn how to walk. Mm. You watch a little kid learn how to walk and they start pulling up on things. They fall down, and then sometimes they'll stand and they'll wobble back and forth, and then they'll fall down. How many times do they stand up before they even start to walk, and then they start to walk and fall down? How many times? But you don't see anyone sitting on the floor going, I'm not going to walk. It's impossible. Because that's not a thing. So to give yourself that same grace to, like a little kid falling down trying to walk. You just fell down. Get up again. You just fell down. Get up again. Give yourself the grace. Be kind to yourself. You deserve that kindness.
Yeah, absolutely. And I appreciate you sharing in terms of breaking down the word decide, because along the same lines, once you decide to choose your growth, that also means all these other parts of you that are no longer serving you will die too. And sometimes that can mean unhealthy relationships that are reinforcing past beliefs about ourselves or past messages. And I think for a lot of people, there's fear around that too, that if I choose growth, that means a lot of these things will have to go away. And sometimes that can be uncomfortable too, where you have to form new relationships, or the relationships you have need to evolve. And that means a lot of change.
Yeah, definitely. And that's why it is crucial to not do it alone. It's crucial to not do it alone. Hire a coach, get a counselor, join a support group. Don't do it alone, because we heal in the context of community. We need that connection. So we need to have someone to remind us that why we're doing this. We need someone to hold us accountable. We need someone to encourage us. We need someone to make us not feel alone and to alleviate that fear by pouring the love. That's part of my process, the self process. The L in self is for love, because we need that. It's a crucial part of the process of our growth and our healing.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And the other thing you talked about in your experience, and I see this too, and briefly touched on it, but people that have difficult experiences with religion growing up and how it's taught to them and what they witness, I think we're all intuitive in a sense, right? So sometimes we're able to see how people are acting in the name of religion and it doesn't feel right. And when we're younger, we just don't know how to express that. Right. But then once we enter adulthood, some people just dispense with the whole idea altogether because it's so difficult or they've been scarred. But you were able to leave yourself open to a certain extent and redefine what that relationship to God meant for you. Where do you see people get hung up? Because I see a lot of people, they just, like I said, completely, they're like, no, I just don't buy into this. And I see them struggle too at the same time. So what was different for you, and what do you see in other people when they're resisting that connection to God that might be available?
Oh, there could be a number of things. One of the things that I came to, because I was really mad at God, so I tried to prove he didn't exist, but I failed. One of the things I boiled it down to, because of so much theology out there and doctrine and dogma and all that stuff, the thing that really boiled it down to me was about creation. That I did not create myself. I did not create myself. I don't believe in Big Bang, because it breaks all the laws of physics. It breaks all the laws of physics. It's like not a thing. Nothing has ever come alive from something that's dead. It breaks all the laws of physics. And I'm looking out my window right now. Trees and flowers and life and even the Lion King, the circle of life, how things work, the wonder of it all. I'm captivated by the wonder of it, and to recognize that I'm not enough all by myself. I need other people. I need life. I need God. I need that source of love that we were created with that need for connection. And that's not your bad not enoughness. It's more like a puzzle piece that doesn't have the other puzzle piece. It's like it has to go together. It's a beautiful thing. It's not a broken thing. It's a beautiful thing. But when we are disconnected, then it isn't beautiful. Then it's broken. Mm-hmm. That brokenness, the disconnect, we get disconnected from life. We get disconnected from love. We get disconnected from the source of our power. And I'm in the middle of writing a new book right now, which is actually about connection and disconnection and our need for that connection and what went wrong and how do we fix this and all of that. I'm really excited about it now. It's going to be titled Hungry for More, because we have a hunger in us. We've always had a hunger. We hunger for relationships. We hunger for love. We hunger for food. We hunger for lots of things. And sometimes that hunger gets us into trouble, but it's not that the hunger is bad. It's what are we doing with that hunger? And so when someone wants to disconnect themselves, they're trying to make themselves be an island. And there's that quote out there, no man is an island. It's really not a thing. There's no life in that.
Yeah. Yeah. And you talked about the whole idea of finding love for ourselves first. And this whole concept of self-love has become a bit more pop kind of thing. Everyone's talking about it, but I don't think people fully appreciate it in the sense of what does it even mean. I think you can take it more so into the grandiose side of things where you're being a bit more self-centered rather than loving yourself. It doesn't mean that you do it at the cost of hurting others or being arrogant. I think there's a level of humility that comes with it too, that I'm flawed, but I still choose to love myself. And when people are able to, the other analogy I often use, and it's very common, is putting your oxygen mask on first before you're able to do anything for anyone else. It's the same idea. If you're filling your own cup, then you have more to pour from. Exactly. I find a lot of people have it reversed where they're seeking that love from others, but they're also projecting this sense of self that is lacking. So one of the things I often talk about is a scarcity mindset. Like it's always wanting to take from others and not realizing that there's so much abundance that we can all maximize the pie and benefit from it, rather than the only way I can have is by taking. And I think along those lines, you're also touching on that connection, right? People become so disconnected in that sense. So how do you piece all of that together? And what does it look like for you? Because I feel like it's something we have to embody and work on every day to fill ourselves before we can even go out into the world and offer that love to others.
I love how you touched on that. I call that unhealthy self-love. There's self-love, but then it can go to the extreme, like you mentioned, where it can go into narcissism, which people use that word like it's everywhere all the time, but it's not. Then there's also an unhealthy self-love, which I believe I had. So I can use myself as an example without picking on anybody else. And that's a preoccupation with yourself because you are lacking that scarcity because you did not get those needs met. And so you're trying to get those needs met. And you're like, you have this internal frenzy or trauma drive to get those needs met. And so you have this unhealthy preoccupation with self. It's not that you think yourself is so great. It's because you're like emotionally starved. And so you're trying to chase after some sort of hunger or food to get those needs met. And so you have that preoccupation with yourself. It's not really self-love, because self-love sees your value, sees that I have value, and acts in my best interest, which sometimes my best interest is helping other people. That gives us a sense of satisfaction, that connectedness. It's not all about me. No one exists when it's just them. We need other people. Community is something that we need. So a healthy self-love is giving and taking, because I believe love lives in a circle. Love lives in a circle. We have to give it and we have to receive it. And so if someone wants to give it, we have to be able to receive it. And when we want to give it, we need to have someone who will receive it. I like to think of love as like breathing. We have to breathe in and we have to breathe out. We have to give love and we have to take love. So a healthy self-love has give and take. It lives in that circle of love.
Yes. Yeah. No, I appreciate that. So now shifting gears a little bit and looking at the society we live in, and I'm not bringing this up to be pessimistic because I truly believe that light can overcome darkness, but there is darkness, right? And there is a lot of hate at times, otherizing, looking at people different from us based on perhaps what we see on the surface, but not really seeing below the surface that we're all connected to each other in some shape or form. But we see that in the world today, and we've seen that since our existence. If you look at history, there's always fighting for some sort of goal that we feel that belongs to us and we have to take from others. That creates that separation. So what are your thoughts around, especially in the world we live in, right? But we can obviously talk about history too, but in the world we live in, why do you think there is that otherization or separation? And again, like I said, not to be pessimistic, because I think overall the light does overcome the darkness, but yeah.
I can't speak for everyone. This is part of the thesis of the book I'm working on. But people have an ego. And when our ego gets in charge of things, it gets ugly because it's all about them. It's all about power. It's all about what I want. It's the ego. But if we could live from our heart, from our spirit, and we see one another through the eyes of love, then we will see one another differently. I believe that's why Jesus came, was to restore that kind of kingdom. But people, the ego, how I like to draw a picture of it, it's like the ego wants to be the one on the throne like God. They want to be God of the universe. They want to be God of their own life. They want to be God of the country. They want to be God of the world. They want to be in charge of everything. And I think we don't even recognize that's what we're doing sometimes. I think we can be very blind to our own egotism. It's like you had mentioned humility. Humility is a great gift. If we would practice that, put ourselves, see ourselves in a healthy light. No one's perfect. No one's perfect. And if we can embrace that, then we can walk together hand in hand like that. But the ego wants to be in charge. The ego wants to run things. The ego wants all the money. The ego wants all the stuff all the nice things. But the heart that sees the love in other people, they want to give. They want to share. They want to change the world.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. So in terms of key takeaways, so you mentioned that you coach people, you work with them. What are some key takeaways that you can leave us with today as well, and understanding how we cultivate that love and how do we embody it, and some practices that we can be aware of to help enable that?
Well, I would come from my faith background, because that's where I live. I would encourage you to connect with someone else who knows this love. If you know someone, then talk with them about that, or hire a coach. You could hire me. But I've heard in the past, the world's different. Start reading your Bible, go to church, do this, but not every church is safe. And you could read the Bible and twist it around. So those might be good things. Spiritual practices can be good, but they're not the answer. Just dieting can be a good thing, but changing a lifestyle is better than going on a diet. It's changing your lifestyle, connecting with, look up at the sky, look at the creation. Say, God, I want to know you. Show yourself to me. I want to know this love this lady on the internet's telling me about, and cry out for it, hunger for it. And I believe God will answer you and people will come alongside, because what we hunger for, we seek after. And if we seek for it, we will find it.
And when you talk about connecting with people, we've touched on it in different forms, but we haven't really gotten into it, because often we don't appreciate the energy we expose ourselves to. And a lot of people will talk about you're a product of the environment you're in, the five people you spend time with. There's all kinds of different variations of that get thrown around. But I think there's something of worth to just pay attention and do an inventory of who am I spending my time with? And are they lifting me up or are they pulling me down? And sometimes they don't have to say anything directly. It's how they even show up. And that doesn't mean we don't hold space for them or we don't wish them well. But sometimes having that separation can be good for us because at the end of the day, some of that energy can be contagious. So a lot of the times, whether you're being the victim in your story or someone else is the victim, you're just going to have that mindset, right? And I'm a firm believer that what you put your attention to becomes your reality. So if you're always looking at the world as things are happening to you, people are out to get you, or bad things are always happening to you, or you're cursed, guess what? That's going to become your reality. And it's just going to continue to reinforce your worldview. So how do you then shift out of that? And I think sometimes having that inventory, it can be difficult sometimes, right? Maybe you're in a relationship with your partner who has that view. And then maybe you have to think about how is that affecting you as well. And then you talked about your one client who just had to release all of this that she was carrying, and immediately there was a shift. So just having that awareness and checking in terms of what are you surrounding yourself with?
Yeah, awareness is key. You have to start with awareness, because if you don't see something, you can't do anything about it. We don't know what we don't know. I think taking inventory is a wonderful thing. Sit and journal. What is your life now? Write out, what is my life now? What do I like about it? What do I not like about it? And then look at it and recognize what you are seeing there. And is that what you want? Why is that there? My framework is see, expose, love, and free. That's what the self stands for. See is awareness. You have to see it first, but then you have to expose why. Why is that there? I spend this much time with this person and I always feel crappy afterwards. Why am I spending time with them? And be honest with yourself of why. And look at that. And then you go into that because maybe you want to keep this relationship, but maybe you want to make it less time. You just shorten how much time. Like boundaries, you need to establish boundaries. One of my clients, she was dealing with enmeshment in her family. I don't like to use those fancy terms like that. What that pretty much means is she's being coerced and manipulated and controlled by her extended family. Had to always be at all these places doing all these things because they were in charge of her life. And she didn't want that. So she had to recognize, what is going on? Why is it going on? What do I want to go on? What am I willing to do for that? How am I going to do that and not hurt myself and not intentionally hurt them in this process, and how to walk this out so she could get free? And she's doing wonderfully now.
Yeah. Yeah. And the boundaries piece, I just want to jump on that here quickly, because I think people often have a misconception around boundaries too. So some common misconceptions I see. One is, if I'm setting boundaries, then other people have to respect them. The thing there, what I like to remind people is, no, it's your responsibility to enforce them. So if the other person or people are not respecting your boundaries, then you have to figure out a way to enforce it. And sometimes that means removing yourself from the situation or limiting contact, whatever that looks like. Just because you put them out there doesn't mean it's going to be respected, right? So there's that piece. Yeah. Sometimes boundaries can be spoken or they can be internal. I think the biggest piece I've come to realize is I need to have boundaries with myself. What am I willing to accept? What am I not willing to accept? And once I have that clarity, it allows me to show up differently. Right. And then the last piece I will add for boundaries is, it's not meant to keep people on the outside. I think it's just showing people how they can have a relationship with you. Otherwise, they can't, right? So at the end of the day, you're the one who has to protect your space. No one else is going to do it for you. So the enmeshment piece is a great example, because that's where boundaries get blurred or they don't even exist. And people struggle. They know deep down inside something doesn't feel right. My space is not being honored. I don't feel honored in this relationship, but then they don't know how to break away from that enmeshment, because as we talked about earlier, it becomes familiar. It's a familiar space to operate in. Yeah. So anything new can be difficult and tough to navigate.
Well, the thing with boundaries, I like to draw the illustration, because people tend to think of it, like you said, like an all or nothing kind of thing. They tend to think of a boundary as, I need to build a wall around myself. Yes. No, you're not building a wall. What you need is think of it like a fence around your life and your boundary. You have a gate. You have a gate and you can open and close the gate and people can come in and out through the gate and you can lock the gate at certain times and you can open it. When you take your car to the store, chances are you lock your car. That doesn't mean you're never getting in your car again. That means you're protecting your car while you're in the store.
Yeah.
So boundaries are like that. And if people can get that visual, mm-hmm. instead of it's pushing people away, like you said, and keeping them out. No, it's a gate. It's a door.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Danielle, this has been a great conversation. I really appreciate everything you've shared, all the insights you've offered and the wisdom, not only through your personal journey and story, but also based on the work you're doing. I know we've tried to cover quite a bit, but there's always that opportunity if we missed anything and you feel that we can add at this point, I would like to offer you that opportunity as well. If there's anything else you feel that is of value for listeners to understand when it comes to accepting love or giving love, are there other things that you feel that could be of value for people to walk away with?
There's always so much more to say.
Yeah, yeah. I know, I'm putting you on the spot.
Love. That's what I want to leave people with is love. If you're struggling with loving yourself, I want to encourage you to decide to do something about it. Mm. To just start. Like we've said, change can be difficult. It can be scary. But you don't have to jump into the deep end of the pool. Mm-hmm. You can do just one thing at a time because everyone can do one thing. I've even written about it on my website. You could look it up if you wanted to see how to do the progression, but just one thing at a time. You do that one new thing. Let's say your relationships, you're not so happy with your relationships. They're all toxic. You're not going to throw all your friends away. That's just unlikely. Mm-hmm. But you could do something about one of them, or you could look for one new healthy friendship to add. You can look for one thing to add to make it different. Just one thing. It'll be a little uncomfortable, but you can do the one thing. And you do that one thing. You make that new friend. You start listening to that podcast. You hire a coach. You do that one thing, whatever that one thing is. And then after that one thing doesn't feel so unfamiliar anymore, then do another one thing. Do another one thing. And then little by little, you will get to where you want to go and you'll be able to get there in one piece.
Yeah. And I think that's a very good reminder because what I see often people will try to do too much at once or will have that failure. Yeah. Failure to launch where they can't even get started. So to your point, start with the one little simple thing and then you can start stacking things on top once you have consistency. You need to be able to establish some level of consistency with the one thing. And then that gives you a bit more confidence to start building on top. And sometimes we either complicate things or we make big stories in our head and that then we have that anxiety or fear that prevents us from even doing something. I like that. I think start simple, start with one and then work your way up.
As simple, as much as you can do, as little as you need to do. You could start with a little sticky note on your mirror in the bathroom that says, I am worthy of love. If you've never read that or fed that into your heart, it can start with something that simple. Mm-hmm. And then after a while, you won't see that sticky note anymore because it will become too obvious. And we leave things out to remind ourselves of it. And then it gets lost. We don't see it anymore. Yes. So then you need to do something new again. It's how we're wired.
Yeah, absolutely. No, thank you so much, Danielle, for the chat. Now, for listeners that want to learn more about your work, you've talked about your books. What are some ways they can find your resources?
Well, my website is a hub. You can find everything I do from my website. It's DanielleBernock.com. It's how my name is spelled, B-E-R-N-O-C-K at the end. It sounds like a U, but it's an E. But at my website, I'm on all the different socials. I have all kinds of free resources, all kinds of things. But whatever you're looking for, go there, browse around, take what you like, and make yourself feel safe because that is so important because we only heal in the context of relationship, but we must have trust and we must have safety.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much. Really appreciated your time today. And we'll put all of that in the show notes. Wonderful. Yes, thank you. Thank you for checking out this episode with Danielle. As always, please subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or YouTube. That's the best and easiest way to support this podcast. And on Apple and Spotify, you can leave up to a 5-star review. Please check out the sponsors in the description, as well as the Easy Reflections newsletter, a zero-cost newsletter that goes out weekly, where I explore different mental health topics and provide practical tips and insights for the reader. The link to the newsletter can be found in the show note captions, where you can subscribe directly. Thank you again, and until next time.